Hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Sounds and Sights of Cinema here on WHIE Radio and DVDVerdict.com. I'm your host, Clark Douglas. Coming up later on in the program, a review of the comedy Horrible Bosses, starring Charlie Day, Jason Sudeikis, Jason Bateman, Jamie Foxx, Colin Farrell, Jennifer Aniston, and Kevin Spacey. But right now, on the musical part of the program, we're going to spotlight a very talented and popular composer by the name of James Newton Howard. And of course, we have spotlighted Howard in the past on a program particularly highlighting his collaboration with director M. Night Shyamalan. On a number of occasions, Howard's scores have been the best thing about those films. But we're going to spotlight some of his other film music work on the program today, and there's quite a lot of good stuff over the course of his career that we have to choose from. And we're going to begin with a very enjoyable score written for a fun little animated movie called Treasure Planet. Take a listen.
Thank you.
music by James Newton Howard, written for the animated film Treasure Planet. Howard has always been something of an enigma to me as a composer. I can't really seem to pinpoint much of a specific musical voice, but he is very versatile and is gifted at scoring a wide range of films. We're going to demonstrate another side of his talent with his atmospheric score for the David Mamet adaptation Glengarry Glen Ross. Some jazzy stuff from James Newton Howard, written for Glengarry Glen Ross. Next up is a score that takes an intriguing approach. It's Grand Canyon, a movie directed by Lawrence Kasdan, and for much of the movie the score is largely synthetic, features a smaller ensemble, but towards the end Howard tosses in a great big orchestra and delivers this splendidly entertaining piece. Music written for the film Grand Canyon by James Newton Howard, whose work we're spotlighting on the program today. One of his more overlooked scores the past decade is his very fine effort for the live-action version of Peter Pan, which stars Jason Isaacs and Olivia Williams, among others. Let's take a listen to some of that charming effort. music from Peter Pan by James Newton Howard. Let's go back to another of his animated efforts, this one for the somewhat clunky but good-looking CG effort, Dinosaur. Enjoy. Listening to the Sounds and Sights of Cinema here on WHIE Radio and DVDVerdict.com. I'm your host, Clark Douglas, and we're spotlighting the music of composer James Newton Howard on the program today. And we just featured a piece from his score for the animated movie Dinosaur, particularly a superb piece, I must say. And we continue now with an interesting score written for a somewhat forgettable Michael Douglas movie called A Perfect Murder. Take a listen. music written for A Perfect Murder by composer James Newton Howard. Next up, another of Howard's jazz-driven scores. This is his striking end title for the movie Guilty by Suspicion. Music from Guilty by Suspicion by James Newton Howard. Moving from a jazz-driven score to a score fueled primarily by rock music, an interesting little effort for a movie called The Lookout, starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Let's take a listen. Music by James Newton Howard, as is all of the music featured on the program today, written for the movie The Lookout. Next up, a charming score written for a somewhat overlooked family fantasy film called The Water Horse, Legend of the Deep. And Howard brings a lot of Scottish influences into this piece. Let's take a listen.
Thank you.
And that's music written for the film The Water Horse, Legend of the Deep, by composer James Newton Howard. Now time to move along to this week's movie review of the new film Horrible Bosses. Up until now, Seth Gordon has been best known for his fascinating documentary, The King of Kong. Now he makes his transition into traditional mainstream filmmaking with the raunchy comedy Horrible Bosses, which proves to be one of the summer's most entertaining comic outings in spite of its numerous flaws. Our story concerns three male friends who are each working for employers they can't stand. Nick Hendricks, played by Jason Bateman, slaves tirelessly under the cruel, smug, self-serving taskmaster Dave Harkin, played by Kevin Spacey. Kurt Buckman, played by Jason Sudeikis, works for the repugnant, coke-snorting sleazeball Bobby Pellet, played by Colin Farrell. Dale Arbus, played by Charlie Day, is employed by the attractive, sexually aggressive Dr. Julia Harris, played by Jennifer Aniston. Nick and Kurt fail to sympathize with Dale's odd plight, but then Dale is a rather conservative individual who wants nothing more than to be faithful to his fiancée, played by Lindsay Sloan. After one particularly frustrating day, capped by a few hours of heavy drinking, the three pals are struck with inspiration. What if they just murdered their bosses? It would solve all of their problems and make their lives considerably better. Alas, actually carrying out this devious plot proves to be far more challenging than they initially anticipated. In some ways, Horrible Bosses feels like the sort of film I really shouldn't like. It requires some of its characters to act like complete idiots in order for the film to continue. The screenwriters have no conceivable idea of how to write a credible female character. The movie frequently leans on easy shock value for laughs, and the movie is rooted in the kind of frat boy comic sensibility which won The Hangover entirely too much praise. And yet, Horrible Bosses made me laugh quite a bit, and not just due to the cheap but nonetheless enjoyable pleasure of seeing actors like Kevin Spacey, Jennifer Aniston, and Colin Farrell engage in all manner of depraved villainy. There are moments of loopy inspiration littered throughout the film, delightfully off-kilter grace notes which somehow play beautifully off of the film's broad, obvious moments. It takes a reel or two to pick up steam, but after a while the film has generated such goodwill and comic momentum that you're even willing to chuckle at a wheezy scene in which Bateman and Sudeikis contemplate the possibility of being sexually violated in prison. Part of what makes the film work so well is the playful chemistry between the three leads. Their distinctive screen personas play wonderfully off of each other, as Bateman's neurotic despair, Sudeikis's misguided bravado, and Day's dim-witted innocence create a delicious comedic cocktail. Day in particular is wonderful, bringing a reckless energy to a series of increasingly outlandish scenes. His cocaine-fueled freakout is a thing of wonder. Bateman delivers laughs of a considerably subtler variety, turning in those patented despondent facial expressions to increasingly amusing effect. The guys are all technically straight men to their crazed employers, but they manage to ensure that no one has an easy time stealing scenes from them. Speaking of the bosses, the movie stars playing them seem to be having a grand time in their smaller-than-usual roles. Kevin Spacey probably has the most screen time and has fun indulging that nasty swimming-with-sharks snarkiness that he can do in his sleep. Colin Farrell is equally effective with only a handful of scenes, sporting terrifying comb-over, endless flop sweat, and a despairing spite for his employees. Aniston is handed a preposterous character. Julia feels less like a woman than like a cartoon written by clueless men. Even so, she manages to sell the role simply with the entertaining gusto of her performance. It's a vastly more successful attempt at rebranding for the actress than her dark and gritty turn a few years ago in Derailed. However, the prize for Best Supporting Turn goes to Jamie Foxx, who turns in several of the film's most entertaining moments and aces some of the film's best lines. There are two jokes about Foxx's name. The first has been spoiled in many reviews, and it's funny, but the second is gut-bustingly hilarious. That's the film's splendid saving grace. the ability to generate a chuckle and then quickly transform it into a full-blown laugh. There's also a welcome bite to much of the comedy, as this film more or less tosses aside the warm and gooey center which lies at the core of so many R-rated comedies in the Apatow era. As I indicated earlier, I could spend a good deal of time complaining about the multiple flaws Horrible Bosses has, but I really don't want to. Warts and all, this film made me laugh as much as any other I've seen this year, and I left the theater with a silly grin on my face. Easily offended viewers might want to steer clear. There were several walkouts midway through my screening, but otherwise this flick delivers a solid evening of entertainment. I give it a rating of 3 stars out of 4. And that concludes our time on the program today. I do hope you've enjoyed the show and that you'll join us again next week for more music and movie reviews. Have a great week, everyone. Back at you later.
It's